Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday, race fans. Sirius 219 XM. 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well. SteveBick.com on the stream. And beautiful, glorious upstate New York. Travers Week, day two. And Travers Card, drawn and complete. Took a little bit of extra time yesterday to get that card out into the world, but a very, very nice day. We know, of course, we knew yesterday together about the field, the way it came together for the Travers itself, but then we watched and waited for the draw on everything else that makes up Saturday and the stakes sequence, one after another. Starting with the older fillies and mares sprinting. The Ballerina. Ballerina. The Troy. Nope. Let me turn back. The Ballerina. The Ballerina. The Troy. The Weya. The Test. And then the Travers. The Test, of course, pretty much the other highly anticipated get-together, and Gamin and Venetian Harbor, they end up shoulder-to-shoulder in the six-horse field, 5 and 6. And we'll see. The two may simply hook up and throw down because they both want to be on or near. May set things up for somebody to sit in behind. Should they both just gut each other? And of course, you know, Gamin coming out of the one turn, coming out of the big acorn effort, a lot of philosophy will tell you, expect to regress. Venetian Harbor, last seen sprinting, you got to go back to her maiden win at Santa Anita when she went 6.5. To break her maiden. Never worse than second. 5 starts. Venetian Harbor. And, of course, chased Speech. Or was chased and overcome by Speech. And really, she's only, you know, she's lost to Swiss Skydiver and Speech so far this year. You know, other than the win in the Las Virgenes. So, has gone favored in all 5 starts, too. That streak is going to end on Saturday with Gamin's presence. But very interesting. Behind, I suppose, behind the two of them, Mrs. Danvers for Shug. And Up in Smoke, you know, down inside, Up in Smoke, Luis Saez back aboard. George Weaver. Yeah, Up in Smoke, coming out of the victory ride, might be a little bit, might offer a little bit of intrigue. But, obviously, a very fun prequel to the Travers. And you know, I think the inclination, you know, continues to be to pit Uncle Chuck and Tis the Law. And in a lot of ways, you look at the way this draw came out with Tis the Law in the 6-hole. I'm sure Barkley Tag, very pleased with that. Can set up stalking trip. Manny Franco keeping an eye on Uncle Chuck, who, you know, knowing Baffert's interest and predilection for his runners will light out for the lead, period, and try to make him chase. Although, you know, the one thing that is a potential, has some potential, first line, drawing the inside, drawing the one hole, you would think that Davey Cohen, his hand is forced and that he's got to go forward. And did show some speed, actually, going back to that Belmont sprint, and was off quickly and simply ended up chasing. However, shows some speed there. And so first line, won't be surprised if first line tries to go, and that might be fine with Louis Saez aboard Uncle Chuck. He may just sit right off of him and have him as a target. You'll see what Javier Castellano does too with Caracero. Chivalry is generally forward. Should be entertaining. The Travers, 6:15. And one thing I did not look at, and now I'm curious, I'm gonna figure on a pick five. There's in fact the two pick fives. There's a late pick five that ends with the Nightcap, which is a maiden special weight, state bred maiden specials, short on the dirt, and there's an all stakes. There is the all stakes pick five, which links the three grade ones and the two grade threes. So, yeah, that I'm glad I looked at that. And for those that, I guess there was a little bit of confusion the other day online, apparently, about, because somebody wrote me, the mandatory force out on the Empire 6 is on Sunday. So the card that's drawn today will offer an opportunity there, and, you know, over a million already, and you got to figure it. Yeah, what have we got? Thursday, Friday, Saturday, assuming there isn't mayhem that makes it, you know, potentially hit. But we've seen that before. Wouldn't be the first time, right? We'll talk about some of the racing from yesterday, and for those that, and if anybody's wondering, absolutely on the turf today. No problems there. That rain was certainly welcome. And I guess we're in good shape all the way through into Sunday. So you can, don't have to worry about that on this front. I guess next week, though, again, we might get a little. But I mean, all in all, we've lost next to nothing when it comes to the off the turf. Give me a minute to run down what's going on today. And Pat McKenna is going to drop by here momentarily for a quick visit. And Pat, with a upcoming, call it a press advisory kind of a thing, public advisory, kind of reiterating some elements of the travel restrictions into the state of New York. And we want to get out ahead of this in terms of the, you know, the states that are requiring a quarantine period for visitors. And, you know, with stakes coming up on Saturday, this topic needs to be fleshed out, and Pat's going to join us. Dick Powell, immediately following, visit with Dick, and we'll look get some Travers thoughts from Dick, and catch up on his week, particularly following Saratoga. We'll glance at what's happening at Presque Isle. Watched a couple yesterday. Tony Black, of course. Steve Haskin. We'll get Steve's Travers take as well. And Rich Eng later. And I expect to visit as well with Joanne Adams. I want to make sure that we appreciate the effort involved with the Belmont Child Care Association, and they're in the midst of a virtual party which runs until Sunday, and one of the most attended and anticipated galas all summer long here, the BCCA. So with that opportunity dashed, they're having their fundraiser all this week, and I want to let Joanne update everybody, including on the new building, a Saratoga-based Anna House, essentially. There's an opportunity for you to put your name on it if you want to pull out the checkbook. We'll let Joanne flesh that out. So we're also going to talk, as promised, to Sally Goodall, one of the greats, one of the great contest players. And fun yesterday to visit with Vince DiPaolo, and Vince celebrating his really terrific day. And, you know, the fact that that was his first, he's come close, as he's told you. And if you listen to the visit from yesterday, so we're going to do one more. Because Sally is the first half tour season winner, and with that comes a BC seat, Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. So Sally Goodall today, one of contest play's absolute giants. Looking forward to it. Never had Sally on, actually, and so nice. Nice opportunity to visit with her and also see what's going on in Vegas. Nobody has speculated yet if there's going to be any, you know, come February. I hope we don't have to have a virtual NHC. I don't even want to think about that, right? As we wait, Pat is going to join us momentarily. Let's get a couple of notes in from yesterday, and I really had fun actually watching and betting Indiana yesterday, those two stakes, and early in the card, you don't say you weren't warned, Choctaw Bingo, 1440, Air Force Blue, that is now his second first out winner from seven starters, and he's got a total of three wins, actually. From nine starts with seven horses, Air Force Blue, which is, you know, he's not going to jump off the page as much as some of the more heralded or more advertised first crop stallions. Air Force Blue yesterday, Choctaw. And you know, the reason we ended up talking about him was because of Tankerette with Jack Sisterson. And Tankerette ran okay, ran fourth in there. And went off favored, but a little under 3-1. Actually, his second choice. I take that back. Lucky Shore. I didn't even see. Lucky Shore was up the track at 2-1. So Tankerette was the second choice, and Choctaw Bingo was the fourth choice. Got a nice 1440. The stakes, the snack. The strong tide was overwhelming in there for Mike Lauer with Rodney Prescott. And we got a terrific effort from Cash Logistics. And Cash Logistics didn't break well. This was the horse that we talked about, Unbridled Express, and his success with stake runners. Well, that was in evidence. And keep an eye. You're not going to get, you know, not going to get the price going forward, I wouldn't think. But he was 11-1 in the stake and ended up a good second and did okay with this, actually, as it turned. I bet him to win, and then I boxed him with Strong Tide. That was it. That was my play. Strong Tide a Mike and Penny Lauer homebred by English Channel. And was quite good here at 3-2. And then in the other stake, in the Philly stake, we couldn't get, we tried with Bill Downs, we tried to get the floral arrangement, nothing but flowers and timeless rose. Well, nothing but flowers cooperated. Second choice, 3-1 for Dennis Harkus. And, you know, Dennis, somebody you've heard from, when he had that nice Philly fun with Ian Wilkes. And this is his first, I guess, his first Indiana product and a stake winner. So congratulations. I sent a note out, actually. I sent a text to Dennis congratulating him. And Deshaun Parker, who had a big day yesterday at Indiana. And this was for Jeff Greenhill, 780. Copper nickel, yeah, this is why you don't glom on to, you know, horses that are just trying the turf just for the sake of trying the turf, was under even money and never really threatened, kind of chased and then faded. Nothing but flowers, 780. And I'll give you some more of the details, including almost $1,000 pick five there yesterday with two favorites and 3 second choices. I kid you not. Two favorites, 480 and 380, and 3 second choices paid $980 in that pick five. It's unbelievable on a daily basis. They're giving away money. Pat McKenna is going to join us from NYRA, and big weekend on tap, of course, Travers, and tomorrow we've also got the Saratoga Special, which came up really good. And Pat joining us in advance of a media advisory pack. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. And, you know, it's funny, as an aside, before we talk about this quickly, you know, I saw the news yesterday as we were on the air about Pete Hamill's passing, and then when you sent out the daily briefing, the daily summary of racing at Saratoga, you had a very nice reference to Hamill, and obviously somebody that you grew up reading as well, and had great respect for his work. I mean, the guy was. In our lifetime, New Yorkers, not just New York either, he was more than that. He was an international journalist presence.
Yeah, absolutely. Sad, but certainly a full life, right?
85.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, great respect for all those guys and for the folks that are continuing to do the hard work to get the news out there and to report about the world we're living in.
Well, he was an amazing story too, because he didn't finish, you know, I don't even know if he was a high school graduate, and after military service and more, then, you know, became a reporter, and I mean, then just an absolute titan. I mean, a huge success and influence in New York, particularly in the tabloid side of things, plus his books, I mentioned Breslin yesterday because, you know, that he immediately came to mind as contemporaries, and, you know, when I grew up reading, you know, the New York papers, those were the two that stood out. So I thought it was really nice that you had the link to the Times obituary, and then I sent you back, I don't know if you had a chance to look, but I sent you back a list of reading links of some of his best work. So nicely done, Pat. Let's talk about this advisory that's coming later today, and we wanted to reiterate to owners and more about coming here, and we don't want anybody disappointed if they fall into some of the state restrictions.
That's right. Yeah, and actually less of an advisory or an announcement, and more of just a reminder. If we rewind the clock here a little bit to that Wednesday when we received guidance from the Gaming Commission allowing us to to permit a limited number of owners on track, we specified in that announcement that owners coming from any of the states that were at that point on the list of states where, you know, where a 14-day quarantine is required, and I'll emphasize that word required. This is not a suggestion by the state. This is a requirement. You know, unfortunately, at that point, the list was much, much smaller. It has now grown to, you know, to 32 states. So you're talking about Kentucky, Louisiana, Maryland, Minnesota, North Carolina, North Dakota, you know, a whole litany of states. And unfortunately, again, you know, where we are right now is we just need to emphasize to folks who are listening and who may see this news out of at an hour later this morning that if you are planning to attend the Travers, if you are seeking access to Saratoga Racecourse, and you are coming from any of the states listed on the New York Travel Advisory, which is easily found online, then you are required to complete a quarantine here in New York for a period of at least 14 days before you were to, you would be allowed on track at Saratoga. So there's no flying out of Kentucky on a Friday thinking that you're going to land here on Friday night and show up at the races on Saturday. You know, if you've been here for a period of 14 days and you can verify that with us, then, you know, provided you adhere to all the other health and safety guidelines, then you can be permitted on track. These are, again, not the kinds of things we want to be reminding folks of, not the kind of announcements we want to make here on a week that should be a celebration of everything that's great about Saratoga and a really exciting Travers headlined by Tis the Law. But these are really important steps here in New York. We've done a very good job of flattening the curve, of getting ourselves to a point where, frankly, we can run a race meet even without spectators. And we are focused on continuing to run this meet as safely as possible for the benefit of horsemen, of riders, of the entire racing community, and the entire industry that the sport drives. So, you know, it's... frankly, it comes down to personal responsibility, no different than wearing a mask or keeping your distance from others, doing the right thing when you go into your grocery store. These are guidelines that we're subject to. We didn't come up with them, but we absolutely want to emphasize them and want to be sure that people have a very clear understanding that if you are coming from these states, none of this stuff is suggested behavior. It's required. You saw yesterday that they're going to be setting up checkpoints in and around New York City to enforce this policy, and I'll echo some of what they said. You know, none of this, we do not relish talking about these kinds of things at all, but the most important thing we can do to get ourselves back to a place where, you know, we can expand access, not necessarily here in Saratoga, but on down the line, is to do the right thing. And that means if you are in a state where the virus continues to spread, then, and, you know, as the state has put in place clear guidelines, what they consider community spread, then, again, stay at home. You won't be permitted on the grounds of Saratoga if you're coming from a state where you're required to quarantine for a period of 14 days and have not done so here in the state of New York. Testing, no testing for owners, it doesn't matter. You still need to quarantine for 14 days.
Pat, how is, you know, there obviously is some elements of this that may be tricky or cumbersome, including snowbirds that have, you know, that may be Florida residents, let's say, you know, based on, you know, the 184 days or whatever it is, staying down there, but actually live in New York, you know, during the you know, other than the winter. What is the determining factor for people, and in terms of having, you know, having proof that you know, they've been in New York?
Yeah, Steve, I mean, I've been asked, I was asked this last week, actually, in advance of the Whitney. We're not a law enforcement agency. We're not a regulatory body. We're running a race meet here and doing the best we can with some incredibly difficult challenges. So we're asking people to do the right thing. You know, we're not in the position to be sending investigators out to people's residences or checking hotel lists or verifying boarding passes. We can't do that. But by not following the rules, by not doing the right thing, you are putting this race meet in danger. And that's what I'm on, you know, and that's what I'm trying to convey. Do the right thing. We understand these are unfortunate circumstances, and we absolutely sympathize with the fact that if you have a horse in a stake on Saturday or in any race on Travers Day, man, that's a tough one, and I am sure that I would want to run through a brick wall to be here. But at the same time, let's get this race meet done. Let's get it. Let's make sure that we're doing everything we can to ensure that it's safe, that that we can continue running this meet. So there you have it. And in terms of your question about folks who are residents who may own homes here, it's relatively simple. If you have been here longer than 14 days without showing up to the track, then you have now completed that quarantine. And again, we are not in a position, nor will we ever be in a position, to actively enforce these measures. But we are imploring folks to the best of our ability to do the right thing. If you are planning travel from any of those 32 states and you have not allotted for that 14-day quarantine, then you should not and would not be permitted on track.
And for those that haven't visited or seen the list recently, Alabama, Alaska, Arkansas, Arizona, California, Florida, Georgia, Iowa, Idaho, Illinois, Indiana, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maryland, Minnesota, Missouri, Mississippi, Montana, North Carolina, North Dakota, Nebraska, New Mexico, Nevada, Ohio, Oklahoma, Puerto Rico, Rhode Island, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Virginia, Washington, Wisconsin. There you have it. Now, Pat, I wanted to get this in as early as possible this morning because undoubtedly there are people that we're hoping to come to town, and the people are, you know, there's people coming to town and enjoying the atmosphere and just Saratoga in general, and understanding, you know, that they can't come to the track. That part of it seems to be going okay. But I thought, it was important for you to, you know, kind of reiterate where things stand.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the opportunity, Steve. These are this is an unpleasant piece of news, and not what any of us would want to be talking about, as I said, on Travers Week. But we are where we are, and you know, in order to get past this collectively, we got to do the right thing here, and we're doing our best to run this race meet, and we appreciate so much the cooperation of folks, especially those individuals out there in the country who may have a horse in on Travers Day. Hard to imagine the disappointment to not be able to be here, but we'll get past this and brighter days ahead.
Pat McKenna, everybody. PC McKenna to follow on Twitter for everything coming out of the New York Racing Association as the season continues, and another big weekend in the offing. Pat, I appreciate it, and we'll see you later this afternoon.
Thanks, Steve.
Pat McKenna, and you know, this came up just in kind of in passing, and you know, Pat had mentioned that, you know, they were getting inquiries and you know, there was uncertainty. So I thought we should revisit the topic. We'll stay right here, and Dick Powell is going to join us for a few minutes. And Dick, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Dick, we'll talk Saratoga, and first and foremost, and the Whitney weekend overall, a smashing success. And on the business front, in fact, I had this conversation. Pat joined Seth Merrow and I on TV on Sunday, and we talked the numbers, and the numbers are spectacular, and kind of justifying a lot of what Martin Panza had suggested back earlier in the summer when, you know, the racing was still downstate and people wondered whether it was really going to be worth it to come up here. And I mean, when you're breaking a Whitney Day handle record, that says something, and beating it like a drum.
Yeah, and one of the things, and I was going over this with a friend the other day, and I've noticed it the last few months, is because of all the horizontal wagering. Like Saturday, there was 3 pick fives.
Yep.
I don't know how many pick fours. And the smaller fields don't seem to affect the handle of the pick fives. And especially with 15% takeout, I'm a pick five player. I don't want 12 horses in every field. That's a lot of work. That's a lot of combinations, things like that. So when you look at the early pick five, and Saturday I think it was over $1.3 million, you knew they were going to do over $30 million with an extra pick five and 12, 13 races. Every day, if you take the early pick five and multiply it by a factor of around 20, that's usually equal to the all sources handle on all the races. So if today's early pick five is, let's say, 800,000, you could be looking at 16 million all sources handle today. Now it varies, obviously, with some other factors, whatever they might be, but it's been pretty consistent. So if you told me that, you know, you're going to have some shorter fields, especially in the early pick five, which tends to take the brunt of the shorter fields, and yet the business on the early pick five is fantastic, and then it continues throughout the day in the other horizontal bets. So the public has gravitated to those bets, and right now it's huge for racing business because the field sizes aren't affecting total handle as much as you would think they would.
I think in some ways you could even make the case that the smaller, if there's, you know, let's say in a sequence with a 6-horse field, a 7-horse field, that almost would encourage more coverage if in fact, as opposed to, let's say, 10, sometimes 10 and 11 horse fields where, you know, people are going to take some stands and try to tiptoe through, you might. Yeah, there was a race yesterday, in fact, the one that Control Group ended up wiring, where you looked at that group and you thought, five or six of these can win. And, you know, certainly big ticket players, they're going to go ahead and they're going to cover all the ones that they might consider win candidates.
Yeah, it's for me, it's counterintuitive, but it's definitely real. It's more than just a trend. I was talking to a friend who plays Del Mar. He was finding their pick fives have been paying spectacular, things like that. And so it's I was talking to someone the other day about racing. I said, can you imagine if this pandemic happened 15 years ago when we didn't have the ADW infrastructure built and the amount of people that already had accounts already in the mix and stuff like that? I mean, we'd be hurting like you can't believe. But the fact that it was built, it was an operation, and then circumstances changed, but at least people who want to bet have the outlet to do so. And you still get the odd guy who doesn't want to open up an account, doesn't want to give away their Social Security number, whatever it might be. But that's become rarer and rarer. And so now here in 2020, we kind of had the system in place. We've had some benefits with lack of competition. That's been great. And it's working.
We'll circle back to this, actually, in regards to some elements of the tote system and the conversation I had yesterday with Matt Hegarty, following up from his piece from last week in response to the two California CAW hits on pick six jackpots. I want to ask you, because you've got longstanding relationship with, you know, with Tote and with, you know, the kinds of business decisions that are involved with it. Some thoughts from you first, though, on the racing and what we saw with, of course, you know, the misfortune of Tom's Détat with the bad start and opening the door on the front end for Improbable to kind of control things. We had, you know, the absolute straight up shoulder to shoulder vexatious Midnight Bisou throwdown and had an interesting Alan Jerkins as well, etc. We had another steward controversy. Every time it goes upstairs, you're almost guaranteed of controversy. Some thoughts about the racing, Dick.
Well, working backwards, I agree with both stewards' decisions. The personal ensign, even though Jose Lascano veered out and actually kind of went out to go engage Midnight Bisou, there was not contact. And the last race of the day, well, it's the Bowling Green.
Yeah.
There was contact. And, yeah, that tied horses, and it set off a chain reaction. It wasn't the worst chain reaction, but it set off a chain reaction. So I'm watching TV, and I'm screaming at the TV, they're going to put him fourth. You know, they kept saying, why are they taking so long? Because he's not just coming down. They got to figure out a way to place him. So I agreed with both decisions. And I thought both decisions were consistent. One had contact, one didn't have contact. Do I like what Lascano did? No. But I don't see anyone enforcing it. I don't see anyone saying, well, we'll let the results stand, but we'll give them 3 days or some reprimand that would put you on a reprimand list, you know, that the next time you're not going to get off as easy or anything like that. But that's the way things are. I'm not changing that. So under those circumstances, I agreed with both decisions. The Alan Jerkins, I really enjoyed because I liked Echo Town.
Nice.
Got the exact trip I was hoping for, and he was as strong as could be in the stretch. The Whitney, what bothered me with the Whitney was the focus on Baffert's horse. Number one, why wasn't he backed out of the gate? I mean, he flipped really severely. And I thought, for safety reasons, you back him out to check him, see if he's okay, put him back in. Everyone else gets a breather. Well, they're all yelling, no, 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 no. And then, boom, the minute Baffert was okay, the race goes. And I don't think that helped Al's horse. I don't think it helped Shug's horse. So that was my real-time take of what happened and when it happened. And it was too bad because I know Al's horse was primed and ready, and just a shame. I see he's shipping him back to Kentucky, so no chance for the Woodward or anything else like that. And, you know, I don't blame him, but he had him primed and ready. And it was like a harness race, you know. He breaks stride at the start. It's over. So yeah, no chance catching Improbable, nor did anybody else. And I was disappointed in Code of Honor. I didn't like him to win, but I thought he would run better. And he just was kind of flat. He didn't get any help up front, and he was, you know, mile and eighth, short field, soft pace. That wasn't going to be the circumstances for him to do well, but I thought he would run better.
Yeah, and they really, I haven't heard much, you know, coming out of it either, as to, you know, what kind of, you know, what issues could be attributed to that performance. And you know, I'm glad Tom's Détat's all right. I guess you can understand Rosario being conservative. I mean, the first order of business when a horse starts like that in any race is, you know, let them gather themselves before you do anything. And the worst decision is always to rush them into contention. But I was surprised a little bit that he, you know, he really didn't, on the backstretch at some point, you know, try to get him into a position where, you know, he would have more of a opportunity to contend at some juncture. And It seemed to me that he was kind of holding him safe. That was just my impression, because it wasn't as if they were, you know, certainly they weren't going fast. You know, they didn't run away from him.
Yeah. It was the race for me was just a big disappointment. So, rest of the card was obviously very good. Just trying to think. I don't know. Last week, 20 favorites won the 49 races. So that was 41% for the favorites. The average win price last week was $10.84. But for the meet, it's still $12.64, which is okay. 54 favorites have won the 153 races, so that's 35%, and field size is 7.6. I'm worried about field size going forward, because there's no replenishing. It's not the type of meet where you got horses coming and going and stuff like that. We're not seeing shippers from Monmouth and Parks and places like that we used to get. So I think the attrition rate is going to be felt in the second half of the meet, and I still question whether you can run 10 races a day, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Weekend, no problem. But during the week, I think 10 is really stretching it, and I think it's going to get even more stretched second half of the meet. So we'll have to keep an eye on that, watch that, but that's where we are.
Excellent. All right. Dick, some in the rearview mirror, what about looking ahead? You got a Travers thought?
I know we're talking graveyard of favorites. I don't see Tisdalore get beat. I mean, he's so good. He does everything right. He's so relaxed. Barkley, just every move has worked. It's just I don't see him losing. The Baffert horse, the Uncle Chuck, he's kind of odd when you watch him race. He throws his front legs way out ahead of him. And there's a little bit of speed to the outside. And usually mile and quarter races, no one's going, other than Orlando Noda says he's going with first lines in the rail. But that's right. Not going to affect Uncle Chuck. If an outside horse showed speed and came over, I don't know how well that stride would handle it. But for now, he just gallops up ground amazingly. Third start, grade one, 10 furlong, that's a lot to ask. But Tisdalore, he's just so good. And I don't care what his speed figures are or anything. I care about the speed figures of the other horses. And I don't see him getting beat. I went with Tisdalore, and I went Caracaro for second. You know, cold exactly.
All right, that's why we ask. You got the alternate viewpoint, and it's that kind of race. I mean, obviously, if it's Tisdalore and Uncle Chuck, if they do a Jiper Rydan, it's going to be tough to make money, but we're going to be searching around too. Yep. South Bend's presence is a little intriguing too, and there's somebody in there lurking. The mile and a quarter. It's just so funny. I've said this a handful of times. Instead of what we get leading into Derby, where all you hear for months on end is the mile and a quarter and this horse and how they're going to take to the mile and a quarter, we're going to have about 10 minutes to figure that out and with these eight. And by comparison, here's the first mile and a quarter test of the year. So I love it. Dick, a quick note, anything on the you've been catching up Presque Isle as well?
Okay, Dick's picks are back on the Presque Isle Downs website.
Nice.
$36 winner in the opener Tuesday night.
Look
which
at you.
By the way, I bet, so that's
attaboy.
Very unusual. Not only have the winner, but actually had the time to sit down and make a bet. They did change the stakes schedule. I went through that. They've dropped the Masters. They've dropped the Presque Isle Mile. They still have the rest of the, you know, the Tom Ridge and the Call Boys and the normal stakes schedule, but they dropped those major stake races, which I see Parks has dropped the Penn Derby and Cotillion. So that was a change. Next Thursday, they go back to four-day-a-week racing, so the card will be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So that begins beginning next week. Morales had another big week. First week he had 8 winners. Last week he had 5, so he has 13 winners. He's ahead of Scott Speed, who's had 7. The trainers, Joe Martin, had 3 winners this week, so he's now ahead by a couple over, you know, the usual suspects. And, yeah, 6 picks are back.
That's what we like to hear. Excellent. I watched a couple yesterday, and the racing resumes on Monday at Presque Isle.
And they do start a little bit early at 4:45.
4:45, yeah.
It's not the 5:30 post that they used to have. I don't see total handle figures. Like yesterday I looked at the last race, and the last race did about 140,000. So that, you know, I don't know what the totals are or how the meet is going, since it kind of just like popped up from out of nowhere. And but that'll settle, and they go to October 19th. So I think there's like 44 more days of racing.
We'll check in and get back into a bit of a routine following Presque as well. Deck, I appreciate it. Good luck this weekend, and we will talk next week and have a Travers winner to celebrate in such a strange fashion and timing of the meet, and then we'll, the Alabama on the horizon too when we talk next week.
Okay, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Dick Powell, everybody. Let's take a break here. We'll come back. Sally Goodall is going to join us ahead of Tony Black and Steve Askin. I mentioned the Belmont Child Care Association. Joanne Adams is going to visit. And Libby Imperio, who's downstate and is like so many others. I don't know if you saw. Did everybody see the pictures Mig put up of his driveway and the area right around his place? Holy cow. I mean, big, gigantic trees uprooted, and power is out in big stretches on the island and up, you know, up past Nyack and so forth. Just a pretty wide swath of devastation from the storm. So, affecting plenty of people. Joanne, though, is going to join us, and we'll talk about the Belmont Child Care Association and their fundraiser this week. Let's take the break here. Sally Goodall is going to join us next at the races.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Ah, Saratoga. It's history. It's tradition. It's world-class racing. It's jump racing. Yes, steeplechase racing has played a role in Saratoga's rich history and tradition since 1864. And today, it's a part of what makes Saratoga so special. Watch every Wednesday of the meet and 2 special Thursdays featuring the Grade 1 AP Smithick on July 23rd and the Grade 1 New York Turf Riders Cup on August 20th. Savor the thrill of horses flying over fences. Steeplechase racing, it's a Saratoga tradition.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
First to Give Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.